Tonight on Craft Beer Radio, we drink barbecue sauce.
Yummy. Well, it's been a while.
This is the best sauce on the planet, it says right here.
The best sauce on the planet. This title was awarded at the 2001 American Royal Barbecue Contest. We'll see. We'll see about that.
Night of the Living Barbecue Sauce. These are from Kansas City's Cowtown.
So you know what we forgot?
Was.
Glasses.
Yeah, we don't have beer glasses, do we? We just have water glasses.
No.
All right. Let's do the Boulevard Wheat for the pre-show. We've done that on the show before. This is courtesy of Eric Johnson.
Thank you, Eric. Well, sorry about the delays for everybody. There's been considerable stuff going on at Jeff's job that has caused us to miss a week.
Yeah, we moved our offices, and I was kind of in charge of that. So, I got a little bit of haze in the bottom of my glass or something.
Smells weedy. So how is that going now?
Going pretty good.
How's the commute?
The days that there's not accidents, which is less days than there are accidents. it's not too bad, but yes, there's lots of accidents so far. People need to learn how to freaking drive.
It might take some extra time, because, I mean, they've been learning to drive for a while. And
yeah. It actually takes less. If there's no traffic, it takes less time.
Really?
I got home in 30 minutes the other day. It would take about 45 minutes to get home from my other office. So it's nice. If I think once I, like, you know, all this week I wanted to get there early to head off any problems that may have happened, right? But once I get settled in, I'm probably going to get up, work an hour from home, and then drive in just so I don't have to deal with the insanity that is, you know, rush hour traffic.
That makes sense. As long as your job is willing to let you do that, then yeah, by all means.
Yeah. But other than that, it's pretty freaking fantastic to work across the bridge from the Strip District at lunchtime.
There is a lot of great options out there.
There's so many. I mean, so last week we had lunch, or tacos brought in from El Burro. And which is up on Federal Street, pretty good taco place. Mm-hmm. I thought it was an amazing taco place until I had the tacos from Reina, the little Mexican grocery on Penn. They have a little taco stand set up at lunchtime. Yeah. Oh my goodness, those are so good. And then this past Monday or Tuesday, we ordered takeout sandwiches from Gaucho, that Argentine barbecue right across the bridge.
Okay.
Like 500 feet from our office. And, you know, so it was like on ciabatta bread, and I had the spicy chorizo. It was really tasty. So, what else did I eat this week? I think that's about it. I went to Rivertown for one day, had a liquid lunch.
Hope there wasn't anything major happened afterwards.
No, it was on Friday. Rode my bike down the bike path to Rivertown, rode bike back to the office. It's pretty nice.
So you bring your bike with you to work?
I had, a couple months ago, someone in the neighborhood was throwing out like a 1980s style Huffy 10-speed, and the tires were dry rotted. So I put new tubes and tires on it, but the brakes, the cables, the chains were all in good shape. So I have a work bike that, you know, cost me $27-28 to put new tubes and tires on, so not so bad.
No, not bad at all. Cool.
It extends your range because, you know, driving to the Strip for lunch or something, you know, you're going to waste so much time driving parking and whatnot. So, you know, with the bike, I mean, you could pretty much go to anywhere in Lawrenceville. I think Cure or Smoke, whichever one that is right down there in Lawrenceville, is going to be on the short list.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. And just, oh, cool. I'm going to gain like 15 pounds if I'm not careful.
Well, if you're riding your bike, hopefully that will work some of it off at least.
Yeah. So that's cool. First time working in the city. You know, I've always worked in suburbs or industrial parks and things like that. So
you're still not quite in the city proper, but you're close. You're close enough that it's not that far.
It's probably better than being in the city.
Yes, it is. There's definitely better food than than you. Well, I mean, it's improving, but it's still better.
I mean, like right in downtown, the Golden Triangle. I mean, there's there's some deli type places, you know, things like that. There's some restaurants, but nothing like the Strip, right? Where you just walk up and there's good street food and there's
great ethnic food. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So it's probably better.
It is better
than being downtown.
The Strip is a great place to work, I think. Yeah. So, I've been going on a couple interviews. We'll see if something happens. One of my places may be in Wexford, so I'd be driving up here all the time. who knows? I don't really have much to talk about. I've been focused a lot on job hunting, so I haven't had a chance to. To jump into things I wanted to jump into, including the...
Right. Yeah, I've been focusing on the move, right? I mean, things, other than a couple hiccups, things went amazingly well. Everyone appreciated it. You know, everyone was able to keep working. So it was great. I mean, you know, I felt like Hannibal Smith. You know, I love when a plan comes together because, I mean, this was my every moment that I was awake and thinking about work, which was much more than the time that I was at work. I was planning this move so since the beginning of June. So it was awful nice to see it all come together and have everything. Holy crap, I can plan things like this, you know?
Well, that's good, yeah.
Yeah.
So, so you should get a nice bonus.
Yes. We'll talk about that off the air.
Again, yeah, I've been running around, so I really haven't don't have how much I have to talk about. Haven't been paying too much attention to the stuff that's been going on.
Yeah, same here. Trying to think. So the World Series, Red Sox won.
Red Sox won the World Series.
And I thought I heard a couple interesting things, but I've since forgotten them.
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, well, no, it's just been...
I'm, like, drawing a blank. Like, the only thing I can think of right now is that thing Damien said about the hooker signing up for Obamacare.
Oh, the, yeah,
healthcare
yeah,
for her,
yeah.
Healthcare for hoes or whatever it was.
There's been new revelations about... The Snowden thing.
Oh, yeah, so, we could talk about that a little.
So, this was something that I hadn't anticipated because, you know, I was saying, look, the government can't, I mean, they can break encryption if they try really hard, and they can break certain forms of encryption a little bit easier, but it's still a hard process. But it turns out that, well, they figured out, you know, that they put in interceptions when it's just plain text, you know, beyond the SSL, so they can just grab it.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is the nutso part. You know, Google wasn't encrypting their back-end traffic between from Google to Google servers. Their different data centers were linked with private links, you know. Basically, imagine a hose where one end is in one data center, the other end's in the other data center. It goes across the public internet, but it... Or, no, not in this case. It's a point-to-point link. The NSA tapped the freaking point-to-point links.
Right.
So, basically, they were able to infiltrate Google's network by tapping these links that they, you know, probably like an OC3 or something that they paid, you know, tons of money for a carrier. Yeah, they'll just tap that shit. Because, like, the previous revelation where they're talking about how they were collecting everyone's buddy lists and stuff and how many buddy lists they collected from Google. I'm like, how the fuck are they collecting buddy lists from Google? Because I know I've read about Google's SSL key regime. They swap out keys on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the front end part just is, it's not practical to break that part. You can't break that SSL, you know, as the cryptology, you know, some of the security analysts say, you know, trust the math. And especially the way Google does their key regimen. Not hackable in the front end, but yeah, no, let's just put a tap on this private circuit over here. And I mean, we heard a while ago Google was switching over to encrypting all their back-end traffic, and it's probably done. If not now, will be done very soon.
Right.
But yeah, it's just... So that explains how they were capturing Google Buddy lists, because I was very skeptical of the that slide, of that report, because of how I understood security. They couldn't just get the Gmail Buddy lists unless they ended around the whole encryption part of it, which is what they did.
So that presents more of a an issue, definitely. Still, I'm still hesitant to say that it's something that is disturbing me strongly. And only because I just feel like there's this sort of perception or I don't know, feint of security when there really shouldn't be one. The idea that, like I said, we all have this, you know, massive amount of connections, and the idea that this should be completely secure is a little foolish. Not completely foolish, but a little foolish.
Yeah. Well, they said, you know, I mean, they've said in other... Well, Snowden said it in the interviews, right, where it's a lot easier to circumvent the system than to break the system, right? You know, so you find...
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the idea in general that people have that all of our communications over the internet should be completely private without us taking extraordinary measures.
That's a good point. Imagine how pissed Google is.
Yeah. I'm sure they're very pissed. I'm sure they're extraordinarily pissed.
Yeah, I mean, you get a wiretap on one of your interconnects between your data centers.
And not only is there a wiretap on that, but you have no idea.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
I mean, okay, so, you know, I said this before. You know, the thing that pisses me off the most is that the tinfoil hat guys were completely right. The most alarmist freak job out there saying the government's spying on you was not being hyperbolic. Well, he was telling, I mean, it turned out, you know, the worst of what they were saying is not even the full extent of what the NSA was doing. Mm-hmm. It's insane. It drives my, it just is bonkers to me.
And is it next level bonkers?
It's not next level bonkers. It's just bonkers. I was very happy in the last, how did this get made? They were using bonkers, but they didn't throw it next level. They saved it. They held it back or something a little more crazy. So I was happy that they didn't throw it out there, you know, just as everything, you know. I'm happy they literally didn't throw it out there.
Literally.
Where was I going with that whole thing, though? Should people expect that their communication's private? People,
based on history, based on communications throughout history, how they've worked, is it reasonable to have an expectation of complete privacy without taking extraordinary measures to ensure?
I think it's reasonable to have an expectation that the government isn't, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but you know, they're taking extraordinary measures to capture all this shit. And it's overreach of power. It's illegal. It's impeachable.
Well, it's not illegal. That's the problem.
And it should be.
It's not illegal.
It should be.
And so, you know, the laws have made it such that this sort of thing is not illegal. So the only complaint you can make is, well, we need to change laws. And right now, we can't even fund the government for a certain period of time. So changing the laws to enact this when a considerable minority, at least, and actually probably a majority of people who are in Congress support it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen anytime soon.
I mean, there's a difference between giving up privacy for convenience, like using iChat instead of Threema or something like that, mm-hmm. which is a true trust no one instant messenger. But then there's the you're giving up that privacy to a known entity, right? You're choosing to let Apple be the keeper of your privacy at that point, right? And they have privacy policy and whatnot. I
think it's a harder question than the.
I mean, the NSA is just. Can we do it? Yeah, let's try. Let's do it. Who cares if it's, you know, questionable, if it's moral or not? You know, it's just. Yeah, let's go. Let's tap Angela Merkel's cell phone. What the fuck? See if we can do that.
Yeah.
How do they process all the data they're collecting?
That is the biggest question to me. That is the thing that. That makes it still makes it seem like there's not as huge a problem as people want to say, because you're talking about a ridiculously hard problem.
I can see it's probably I think we've talked about this a little bit on the air, and they're collecting data and they're not indexing at all, right? They're not I'm sure there's some intelligence that flags things, right? But in general, especially this metadata collection, it's kind of an afterwards. Okay, Greg Weiss is a person of interest. Let's develop Greg Weiss's social network, and then it all comes into place, right? But they're not calculating that you and I are connected preemptively. You know, I can't imagine they're collecting all the data. But yeah, the amount of that when they talk about the buddy list collection, about the amount of 250 million buddy lists a day or something like that.
I didn't read that, so I don't know.
From Google,
250 million buddy lists a day. There are like 300 million people in the United States. So for them to collect 250 million buddy lists a day, they'd pretty quickly
collect all of them. Yeah. No. But getting all that stuff, you know, that's the part of what they're doing is just trying to get this complete picture of everyone's social network so they can track things down faster. You know, how well does Jeff know the guy at LAX that, you know, shot up the TSA guys today? Not so well. Good. Jeff's in the clear this time, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's the problem, which is that, and I said it before, all this only matters if you're interesting. And for the most part, people are not interesting. The problem becomes what happens when you suddenly become interesting.
When you become interesting, or when the scope of... when their goals change, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay. Computer processing is so cheap that we can index everything. And, hey, let's get more value out of this. Let's use it to... I don't know. Let's prosecute minor, stupid things, right? Hey, look, Greg Weiss said he smoked marijuana on the show, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean...
Granted, you can't prosecute just for saying you smoked weed on the show, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah, you can't. I mean, that could only be prosecuted as part of a thing where, you know, maybe if they found me distributing drugs... Mm-hmm. And then they could use that as basis
I think that's kind of the concern for the average person, right? When it turns into 1984.
Right.
And everything is watched and you're, you know, anytime you step out of line.
But isn't there a difference between 1984 and this? I mean, yeah.
You could argue that it's a slippery slope and it couldn't be long before all that gets
incorporated. You could argue it's a slippery slope, but is there evidence that it is? I mean, all we're saying is that actually, yeah, there is a security apparatus.
Well, you can't argue that there has been a slippery slope. If you look at the things that they've done, and if you put it together in chronological order, they're getting more and more aggressive with their data collection.
Well, a slippery slope towards data collection, but not a slippery slope towards totalitarianism and using that data collection to be thought police. I don't think that there's any evidence that that's happening. So it's simply, you know, it's true that data collection was a major part of the totalitarian regime in 1984, mm-hmm. but does data collection itself necessarily lead to totalitarianism? And I don't think that you can show any evidence that, that that's the case. So you're just talking about one aspect of something mm-hmm. that's not necessarily the whole. And just saying that this particular thing reminds you of George Orwell, you know, that if it doesn't lead to the totalitarianism aspect mm-hmm. and the thought control aspect, then it's not a fair comparison.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I don't have a, I wasn't really prepared to argue that back and forth, so okay.
Okay. There's my point. Anybody who is listening may say something about it. So Nate Stimmel said, first of all, on one of the episodes, apparently I said, let's be clear, any of these beers would taste fine in a shaker pint. I think we were talking about how we love our little glasses. But I did say that, look, these glasses are, we love them, and we think the beer tastes better, but mostly any of these beers will taste fine in a shaker pint. And he said, yes, thank you. So apparently he likes shaker pints. Which is fine. I like him too.
I missed that. I didn't see it.
That was a craft beer rate at craft beer rate I mentioned.
Oh, I see.
Greg Flamera asked, you might have mentioned this, but the xylit stoppers don't work in Dogfish beer 750 milliliters.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about that in the main show.
Nate also asked, he keeps hearing CBR Greg saying that beer is 97% water. Wouldn't water percent be at most 100 minute ABV?
Throw that at me again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that means. It's the second one down there. Yeah. I don't understand,
wouldn't
Nate.
Wouldn't water percent be at most 100? Is that minute instead of minute? 100 minute with minute ABV. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What time of day was that sent? What day of the week?
And let's see. Is there anything else that was asked of us that's recent?
There's a segment for the show. You just have a tweet bag, a real quick thing.
Yeah.
A couple tweets.
Tweet bag.
Well, since we have nothing to talk about other than our loss of privacy in the modern world.
Oh, how's your thing coming along? Did you get any chance to work on the kids'
Playhouse? Today. Put most of it together today. Then it started to rain, so we had to tarp it up, and then if it's nice tomorrow, I'll probably be able to start putting shingles on it. So, getting there. Almost done. I'll have to put the windows in, make a new door for it.
It's too bad it's just starting to get too cold now.
Yeah, I know. But hopefully it's still there in the spring.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I mean, sorry, don't have much to talk about on a two-week pre-show. We've been busy.
I can talk all about DNS zone changes and new network numbering and all that fun stuff, but that's not very exciting.
I don't know. Is any of my science stuff that I always talk about exciting? Some people may argue.
Well, I don't even find it interesting. You know, it was fun to plan, but retelling it's not a compelling story.
Yeah.